Okay, the big clock over there is at three, so I can now begin with the usual announcement. If I remember this from last year or 3 months ago when I last did a Saturday afternoon class, that welcome to the ongoing meditation class at Dhammaloka every Saturday afternoon. This is the class for those who have meditated before. For those who are coming to the introduction to meditation class being held by Peter Smith next door, that is in the room to my right. And here we meditate for a little bit longer than they do next door. We usually meditate here for about 40 minutes, maybe 45. So it's a bit long for some people. So if you feel that that's a bit too much for you when you begin, we can start in the beginner's class. This is for the experts. So welcome to the experts class on meditation. Oh, thereabouts. So, still people coming in, but never mind. So during this class, every Saturday afternoon, one of the monks or nuns, we talk a little bit deeper about meditation and some of the problems which come up. So there is a lot in meditation about how to relax the body, relax the mind. It's very good for both of those. But you also can take it that little bit deeper. You're really understanding just how your mind works and apply that to your daily life. Because meditation is not something which you just do as a religious activity or a health activity, which is just, you know, what you do when you go to a temple or you go to like a spa or something. This is something which you do which affects your daily life, because how you can relax and cope with the difficulties of life is usually just how you get deep meditation. The two support one another. And it's one of the reasons why that you try, even like as a monk, not to separate out just the way of meditating and the way of living. So we want to live a peaceful life, but also a productive life. And so you can have together. So one of the reasons why I say that is just even a few days ago, going to give a talk somewhere, came up with the same old simile which I developed a long time ago. And people say, well, sometimes I just don't have time to meditate. And it reminded me of an anecdote of one old friend a long time ago who said that he meditates 1 hour every day, except when he's busy. And when he's busy, he meditates 2 hours every day. It was one of those counterintuitive statements, which is one of the reasons why it stands out, why it's easy to remember. If he's busy and he's got lots of things to do and lots of things to perform and produce, then he does 2 hours a day to make his mind more efficient and more, obviously, productive. It's one of those cases that, and I don't know why people don't understand this, because they've had this experience so many times. So many times you're working, writing a letter, doing an email, trying to fix a problem, trying to make a solution to something, and what happens? You just, you know, there's a block there. You just cannot find the right word. You cannot put the sentences together. You can't find a solution to the problem. And a lot of times it's because you're not quite brain dead, but your brain is very tired and sluggish. It's been working too hard. Just like a person who's been walking or running, after a while they've got to take a break. They can't just keep running at that place all the time. You can't use your brain at that rate continuously. And I always remember that was why, I was a school teacher for 1 year, that's why in education psychology, why you had to have a recess in the morning and in the afternoon and also one at lunchtime. And the break times. As I mentioned to a group last Thursday, that is one of the reasons why the British, my ancestors, they used to have a very powerful empire, because they knew some meditation from a long time ago. It was called tea break. morning tea break and afternoon tea break. And they had to have 10 or 15 minutes in the morning just to relax. 10 or 15 minutes in the afternoon to relax. When I first came to Australia, I was called a smoker. You know, but you know, you're not supposed to smoke anymore, so you don't have any break at all. So, in order to just relax the brain, to calm it down, to re-energize it, it's great to have those breaks during the day. Trouble is, if you do have a break, hardly anyone knows how to use it. They go and talk to somebody, they go and catch up on some other business, they just have a cup of coffee and just yak, yak, yak. But what a wonderful thing it is if we could have those moments when we do feel tired, to fully relax. Of course, that simile, here it comes again. How heavy is the glass of water? Well, I demonstrate this simile so often, you get some interesting experience. I did this once to a Buddhist group in the Imperial College in London, a group of engineers. And as soon as I said, how heavy is this glass of water, some smarty pants said about 225 grams. That's not what I was looking for answering, probably right. But it's not measuring it, it's just how heavy does it feel? And of course the answer, as you probably all know, that is the longer you hold it, the heavier it gets. And after many minutes it feels so heavy you're in pain, and you can't hold it comfortably. And that's a simile of when you're working too hard, when you don't give yourself a break, you hold your responsibilities and duties so long that you're tired, your brain just doesn't work properly, and you don't produce anything. So when the glass of water is too heavy to hold comfortably, you put it down. You put it down, relax and rest, just for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And when you pick it up again afterwards, the water is light. It feels like it's because your muscles have recovered. And that's how your brain works. If you keep pushing, trying to find a solution, trying to get things done, trying to tick things off your list in your box or your list of lists, you find out that after a while you just can't produce anything at all. You are wasting time. So learning how to meditate, to relax, to really let go, is a way of creating more time, being more productive. So, problem is, people don't know how to put things down, how to relax. They can't rest at night, they can't just enjoy the sunshine or just watch the trees. They're always busy doing something, wearing out their brain. So, Harvard Business School calls it an investment of time, giving yourself a break. It has to be a real break. So here in meditation, we learn how to make the best use of those moments when we can take a break. Not to worry about things, because it's okay, you can close your eyes and sit there and you think about so many different things. What a waste of an opportunity that is. So in order for a person to actually to make that transition from what you have to do in this world, what I have to do in this world, and then to make the transition to a place of peace and stillness inside, it's one of the reasons why one of the first practices of meditation, this is even recommended in the old sutras by the Buddha, was to do body awareness first of all. Start with your body and then you work into your mind to relax that. And so to start on your body, it's not that hard. How does your body feel right now? How is it? Aches, pains? Are you hot? Are you cold? You got indigestion? You're energized? Are you tired? How do you feel? Simple thing like that. But because it's so simple, many people think, no, I just want the real meditation, come on, watch the breath or watch sort of great lights in the mind. No, start with what is very easy. then later on, you can work up into something which is very refined. So, it's one of the reasons why sitting down on the ground, on the chair, on a cushion, on a stool, leaning back against the wall, how are you? Now, sometimes people say, oh yeah, I'm sort of okay. That's not good enough. Can you make yourself more comfortable? Now, that's without lying down or falling asleep and bringing your bed and your duvet to the Saturday afternoon class. But how can you make your body feel a little bit more comfortable? So that's one of the reasons why we sort of have these cushions, these stools, these chairs. So you can find what is best for you at this time, at this place. It's not always the same. So once you have got some idea of your body, then we take it to the next level of doing what we call the sweeping of the body, part by part. There is many different sweeping of the body meditations. Some people just use that and use that alone to get into some deep meditation. But what it's useful for everyone at the beginning is to make sure as you go part by part through your body. Just like somebody like an airline pilot has all these different sort of things they have to check before they take off. They've got the fuel, they've got the passengers, they've got, I don't know what else, but they can check everything. And this is what you're doing with your body, to make sure your body, everything is just in optimum position. And of course, I'll go through this when we do the guided meditation. And when you check it's in the right position, sometimes it's not in the right position. Sometimes your legs, so in that position last time it tended to work, but today, no. You need a different position. So you check, and you move them. It's amazing how people think that, oh, you should, once you close your eyes, you shouldn't move, you shouldn't fidget, you shouldn't cough, you shouldn't scratch, you shouldn't do anything. That's not real meditation. And sometimes, where's the kindness and the wisdom? So, if you need to adjust a posture, adjust it. Sometimes you just don't get it right the first time. You adjust it and you feel. How does that feel? And little by little, you are caring for every part of your body, bit by bit, as you move up the body. And when you move it, it can relax. It feels better. That is one of the great things with mindfulness. It gives you feedback. In other words, you just know if you're more relaxed or you're more tense. You can feel that. And with practice of mindfulness, if you're looking at the right place, not where you want to get to, that's looking over into the future somewhere, but looking where you are, how is this? Is that more comfortable than before? Little by little, you get to know your body. And you get to know how to relax this body of yours. Because you find that sometimes I'm sitting like this, and sometimes I know how to relax it. You can feel just the tightness in your stomach, just to get released. Sometimes you've got an ache in your knee, and sometimes moving it doesn't sort of help, but sometimes you can just almost like relax the tightness there, which is often some fear, makes you tense up. You can feel it, you can imagine even. Well, I sometimes do imagine that something is squashed, there's pressure on it. And I imagine just the pressure being taken off. I imagine sometimes like a sponge has been wrung and it's really twisted and compressed. And they're just taking that pressure off it and untwisting it so it becomes all light and fluffy, it comes back to its natural untense, unstrained state. Other times, sometimes I feel part of my body is being pulled. It's being pulled on both ends. Sometimes I do that with my shoulders. Imagine, because some time ago I think I saw these muscles, shoulder muscles, and just, you know, they're almost like little strings. And imagine they're just being pulled apart. And imagine them just letting go of both ends. So the muscle strings, they just relax. They lose the tightness, the tension. So I'll do that with my body. It takes a lot of mindfulness and also some skill, because what I'm doing there, I'm letting go. You already probably got the point there. If you squash something, you're pressurizing it, trying to put it into a shape, into a size, which is not its natural shape. You let go, and things become their natural shape. Strings, so tight. And if it's so tight, you can feel that tension. So imagine just letting go of both ends, and then there's no tension on it. To have stress and tension and pain has to be some pulling and pushing somewhere. Some of that is, you can't avoid it, but some of it you can lessen by being aware and learning how to let go. And the learning how to let go is where we try this or try that until we find what works. We get the feedback, our body relaxes. And as you learn that more and more, you're learning the awareness and this wonderful ability which you've heard so many times, let go. You're actually doing it. You know it by its results. You're getting feedback. If it's tightened, that's not letting go. That's demanding tightness. If you relax, you just let go of something. Well done. It's the same with, in a moment afterwards, we go to our mind and we let go of our mind. In other words, let go of the past and the future. How do we let go of the past and the future? Same way. We're aware. What troubles us? Present moment is here. It's the future which is a worry. It's the past which is the burden. Right now is always peaceful. So, little by little we learn how to relax and how to let go. As far as the thoughts are concerned in the mind, what's the problem with the thoughts? It's only because we are agitated. Sometimes people try and stop the thoughts, it makes them more agitated. They come and complain, Ajahn Brahm, I can't stop thinking, I'm going crazy, I can't let go. So we teach you how to let go. And you know it by its effect. The water, the lake, of which the waves on the surface of the lake are the thoughts. As long as the water is moving, there will always be thoughts. But if you calm down the water, your mind, let it be, then the waves get less and less and less. Your mind becomes still. And the thoughts, they go. They don't exist. We have a still, beautiful, calm lake. Letting go is not that hard. So, we will now prove that. So, that's the introduction. So those of you who are already stiff, then you can actually move, have a stretch, have a cough, have a sneeze, and then in a few moments we can start the meditation. We'll go for about 45 minutes. I will lead the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and then leave you to your still, peaceful lake of a mind. Okay, so here we go. So with your eyes closed, the reason why we close our eyes is because it's one less sense channel to disturb us. We've only got really four senses to be concerned about, plus our mind. So we just do a gross relaxation, a coarse relaxation first of all, just making sure your body is reasonably comfortable. If you're on a chair or on a cushion, make sure the cushion is not too far forward, not too far back. Mine is too far back, so I'm going to adjust it. If you're wearing a robe, make sure it's not falling off, like mine was a moment ago. And just do it as a general relaxation, and then we can get more specific. How are your feet now? Something simple, and people don't really spend so much time being aware of their feet. So see if you can relax them. They may be sort of in an uncomfortable position. So move. When you do move, you check afterwards. Does that make it better? You're doing mindfulness, feedback, kindness. Do you find the best position for your feet? Your feet to your legs, especially your knees. People do have lots of knee problems in life. So right now, see if you can get your knees into the best posture. If you're sitting on a chair, make sure that the knees or other legs aren't sort of tucked in, aren't too far forward. So the knees aren't put under sort of stress or too much pressure. And up the thighs, making sure that those huge muscles are just nicely relaxed. And sometimes you can get like a stitch in those muscles or a throbbing pain because you've had a bruise there or something. But sometimes you just pause and be with that bruise or that pain and relax it. How do you relax it? Try this, try that. Imagination, visualization. See if it works. See if that ache, that throb gets less, or whether it increases. If it's increasing, going in the wrong direction. Turn around and go the other way. It takes a lot of trial and error, experiment, but as long as you are mindful of how it changes things, then it's never wasted. You learn. You learn a wonderful skill about how you use meditation to relax and heal your own body. Then you go to your butt, making sure if you need to fidget, fidget now. Otherwise you find you're uncomfortable and it's disturbing you. Go up to your waist. I had to loosen my belt because it was a bit too tight earlier. And I know if I don't act early, it'll become tight and disturb me later on. Tightness will lead into my comfort. And then up my back, I like to stretch my back at this point. As you learn this from animals, I like to do a big stretch. And then let go. And I check my hands. It doesn't really matter where they are, as long as they're comfortable. So sometimes I do move them at this point, just to get them as relaxed as possible. But I don't really agree when people say, oh, they have to be connected this way or that way to keep the energy inside. I think that's a lot of you know what. I just keep my hands comfortable. And they go up to my shoulders. I said that often imagine them like a bunch of strings on either side of the spine. And sometimes you feel them, they're very tight and tense. They're pulling. So imagine this two invisible beings on either side stretching these strings called my muscles. Imagine them letting go. When I imagine that word let go, I often can be aware of the muscles actually relaxing. I'm not holding things tight anymore. And moving up to my neck, making sure that the head is balanced on top of the neck, otherwise you get muscle pains. Making sure inside the throat there's no itches. If there is an irritation, then inflammation. Sometimes what would you do for other inflammations on the outside of your body? Just be kind to it, don't sort of annoy it. A lot of times the irritation lessens. Sometimes just a little bit of kindness and care, compassion. Actually look at some of my muscles and they're like individual beings. I'm kind to them. It's amazing they respond from kindness to relaxation. And then to my head, starting with the eyes and the mouth. Can you imagine, I can feel the muscles around those, that part of my mouth. I've learned how to let them go. So what was once tight and screwed up is now open and free. Feel the muscles being loosened. My whole face now at peace. And then just to continue this, I just go a couple of inches behind my eyes to where I imagine the center of my brain is. Like many of you, we have to do so much thinking, arranging, administration, talking. Sometimes my brain feels tired. It's not supposed to have any sensations at all. I just imagine my brain and I relax it. Take away any tightness, any tension. Take away any demands on it to produce, to fulfill, to achieve. My brain can relax now. And I imagine my whole body sitting here. From the feet up to the head, including the brain, relaxed to the max. From this point, I invite you, if it's possible, to see if you can notice the joy, the delight of a relaxed body. Similar to what I imagine people who go to a spa and have a deep massage, or just lounge in a pool, not cold, not hot, so the whole body loosens. It does feel delightful. Or waking up in the morning in your bed, not having to get up, cozy, relaxed. Because the delight of relaxation is often underestimated, unnoticed in meditation. It's an important factor which, if you notice, can enhance, empower your meditation and your health. So I just linger with the delight of a relaxed body. Then we go to our mind, the peaceometer. How peaceful are you, or how agitated? It's like looking at the surface of a lake. How many waves are there? How fast are they flowing? How high? Or are they just ripples? Or usually somewhere in between? Once you know, you're actually looking at what I call the peaceometer, checking on how you feel in your mind. And just like learning how to relax your body, now you learn from trial and error and from the feedback of mindfulness how to relax your own mind. What makes you agitated? What makes you peaceful? Experiment. You can try present moment awareness, just being here. Now is where your future is being made. The past is a dream. You only choose certain parts of it and put it together and often get the memory wrong. The future be made here. The past uncertain, that how you remember it is what actually happened. Present moment is the only thing we can rely on. And it creates a deep sense of peace inside our mind. And at this stage it often happens, you become aware of the breath, but don't force it. If you decide to start following the breath, check how that affects your peaceometer. See if you can watch the breath, still keeping the peaceometer at a low value, so you retain your peace. Just breathing in, breathing out, breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. Scanning close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How relaxed in body, relaxed in mind? How peaceful? And why? I will now ring the gong 3 times to end today's meditation. Now, usually at the end of the meditation session, we have the opportunities for questions. But first, from a local audience here, has anyone got a question they would like to ask? Okay, we'll just go from the internet first, because this is streamed live, so we have questions from overseas. From Wales. From West Australia, and from Beverly. From Wales, I've heard of people having out-of-body experience when they have meditated intensely. Do you know this happening? Well, it can happen sometimes. It's very, very rare that this happens, but if it does, it's no real problem. You're just floating around. There's one gentleman, he's passed away now. So he was a good friend, and he was from Burma, and he was an air conditioning engineer, and this was when I first came to Perth 35 years ago. He got a contract up in Darwin, so you know, his wife was down here in Perth, he was up in Darwin, and he told me that he was very jealous of his wife, very protective, he loved her a lot. And sometimes he would just decide just to astral travel, leave his body in meditation and go and check up on his wife in Cannington. And he was Burmese Buddhist, his wife, you know, wasn't any religion, she was English as could be. And she said, he told me, oh yeah, I know when he comes around, because she could feel him. And she would tell him off. She said, look, Keith, look, I'm a very, very sort of good wife, and I don't play around. Get back to Darwin. And it was true. That's what he used to do. And so I've got no reason of doubting those people, especially as one was a Buddhist, the other one was not at all. But anyway, that she could feel that he came around. So it sometimes happens. But if it does happen to you, it's, you know, it's pretty boring. Except, there was one gentleman I know, a long time ago, because I used to go and teach in Carnet Prison Farm. And this gentleman, he said that he could leave his body at will, so he didn't mind being in prison. If he wanted to watch a football match, or watch a movie, or watch the Rolling Stones when they were appearing sort of in Perth, they couldn't stop him. He was just in his bed. And his mind was off, you know, to some auditorium watching everybody. Didn't even need to actually to queue or buy any tickets. And the reason why he did that, apparently, was an interesting story, that when he was young, a boy, maybe about 5 or 6 years of age, or 7 at most, that he was always very sickly, and that one day he was in the hospital, you know, under anaesthetic, having an operation, and he left his body. You know, he was aware at the time. And he said, this was in Yugoslavia, you know, before the breakup of that country. And he would know intuitively that doctors were not looking in the right place. And he said to me, he said this in prison, I've got no reason to doubt him. He said he just willed the doctor not to look where he was focusing, but look, sort of a foot to lower down his body. And as soon as he thought that, the doctor actually looked. He said, yeah, there it is, the problem. He didn't actually say, yes, there it is. He said it in Yugoslavian or Serbian or something, I don't know. But that's actually there. They found the problem and they revived him. He survived. He said, ever since that experience, he could always leave his body at will. And so, well, he didn't really like being in prison, but he didn't have such a hard time as other people did. He could leave whenever he wanted. Interesting. But if you do have an out-of-the-body experience, it's just a little bit of an adventure, but it's a bit of a waste of time. But one thing which happens to people, just a bit of advice, if that does happen to you one day, and sometimes, I'm out of my body, I'm dead, how can I get back in? Which many people are a bit scared of. So the usual way of doing this is so similar to when people are under hypnosis. Have you ever seen someone under hypnosis? They said, okay, now you're going to come back again. I'm going to count down 10, 9, 8. And at the end, when I finish counting down, you'll come back, into your consciousness. You'll be awake again, out of hypnosis. So you've probably seen that in somewhere or other. But that's just pretty much what you do if you're out of the body, having out of the body experience. You don't force yourself, because that, sometimes you get tight, excited, and it means that tightness, excitation means that you get sort of stuck for a little while. You always come back again, usually. I mean, most of the time you come back, find a way back in. But anyway, that's the way to do it nice and peacefully. You say, okay, I've flown around, checked up on my partner, checked up on the movie, checked up on whatever. Okay, now I'm going to come back into my body. At the end of counting, from 10 down to 1, 10, 9, 8, 7, then you come back. And it's very similar. You know the way I end the meditation every week when I'm teaching? I say, now how do you feel, first of all? And then just I should take you out of meditation gently, gradually, and said, now I'm going to end the meditation by ringing the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, come out of meditation. You don't say, right! That's it, out. That is far too harsh. And that Ajahn Chah would often say, that's like pouring boiling water into a cold glass. It sort of shatters. So you just do it slowly. And that's the same with any out of the body experiences. After a while people get bored of it. So what? It's also, you can't just go around checking in sort of people's houses and stuff. It's an invasion of privacy. It's not sort of ethical. Anyway, from West Australia. I've been feeling anxious and it's difficult to breathe properly. Lungs feel compressed. Are there any suggestions on how I can open up my breathing? If you try to open up your breathing, you'll get more compressed. It might be controlling it. So what to do if that was happened? This is an experience. I told a few people about this recently, a long time ago, that when I was a student, and my father had asthma, so he always had many allergies. Didn't really know exactly how to treat them, but he died when I was young. But I remember one day that I was in Durham University, and I ate something. I think it was a salad, and I think it was with some nuts, walnuts, I think. And you know, when people have these reactions, allergic reactions to nuts, and I came out all in hives all over my body, really itchy. It was a really total allergic reaction, just couldn't breathe. And just being, a bit sort of proud, stupid, arrogant youth, what I did, there was a close to the river, so I went down to the river, and just sat on a chair and meditated. And just, you couldn't breathe, really itchy all over. And obviously you could breathe, but it's very difficult. And I just learned how to relax and relax and relax and just meditated. And after an hour, you still had a few hives left. Breathing was sort of normal, but it was good enough to go back home, to lay down, and just it disappeared. When I did see the doctor afterwards, he said, yes, sometimes that happens, because I couldn't exactly say what caused that allergic reaction. But he said it probably won't happen again. It did actually happen again, but much milder, and that was it, twice. And after that, no allergic reaction. So anyway, that's your lung feel compressed, you can't breathe, either anxious or a reaction to something. You know that if you get the anxiety, that just makes it more difficult, so you relax to the max. So this is what you learn here. You know, when you haven't got that problem, now you relax. And you learn the art of relaxation, the mindfulness of learning how to let things go. Being in the present moment is one great way to overcome anxiety. Anxiety, oh, I'm going to die, oh, I'm not ready to die. Oh. So all those anxious moments, looking into the future and expecting the worst, that's called anxiety. Looking into the future and with a positive mind, expecting the best, who knows? I might not die. So whatever it is, when you have that positive mind looking into the future, you relax. Or if you even the present moment, looking at this present moment, I can learn to relax. You've done that so many times now that it's, you know, you've got no fear, you can control the body in the sense of just let it go and it becomes peaceful and works by itself. Same, similar. So lungs feel compressed, you can't breathe. Maybe few people have that experience, but many people have the experience. And please, I don't know, it must be something in my genes as well, being gross. Constipation. You can't, you know, do your stuff. So what do? You try and push, and you just actually compress things even more. So I say that, you know, just meditation really helps you to have, especially maybe at my age, I don't know, regular bowel movements. Because you sit on the can, you just relax. You relax and let go. And so, you know, it just things come out easy. If you force it and you're tense, you're anxious, of course you sort of get all scrunched up. And, you know, I'm not sort of a doctor or anything, but that's, you know, how my body works. You just know how to let go. And then there's no problems. So the same if you can't breathe. Relax. When I was over in Thailand, we had a book in our monastery of monks only called How to Give Birth. Really weird, but it was just a good book. Some hippies over in San Francisco had moved out, I think it was Tennessee, and there was a commune. But one good thing they had there was they had all young people and they were having babies like no one's business, and certainly not my business. But anyway, then they had this beautiful way of birthing. First of all, they never called it labor, pain. They called it labor, energy. Just rename it, don't call it pain, otherwise you expect it to hurt. Labor, energy. And they were cheering people on as they were doing this. They were actually letting go. The fear was not causing the contractions to be painful. And they had an ordinary doctor was around, and you know, he was just amazed just how pain-free, fast those labors were. And so later on, because I was a monk, I just didn't know what happened to that commune, but apparently there was a big book written about that, and it became just a classic in birthing medicine. And that's a lot of people, a group of hippies started that. And just, it was a really good insight, how to let go. You just try and push things out, afraid of how long it's going to take, can't take any more pain, of course that creates more anxiety and tension. So that's how you open up your breathing, just the same way that you can overcome any anxiety in the present moment. Just relax, you are breathing, so let the breath, the lungs do the job. They usually do much better than when you try and make them do things. Lastly, in Beverly, how can one apply meditation and mindfulness to work when your mind becomes disassociated? I find that all I've learned in practice goes out the window When this happens, I have persistent feelings of guilt. You know how to have feelings of guilt. You are totally forgiven. I don't know why people feel guilt at all. They make mistakes. That's what we learn from. But anyway, to work when your mind becomes disassociated. I think that's when, you know, that your mind is really, really peaceful. And perhaps know this really well, because sometimes sitting here on a Saturday afternoon, you get really peaceful, really nice and still. And I've got to ring the bell. So thank you for that person who had the heavenly music at 3 o'clock on your smartphone. Otherwise, I might still be meditating here. But you know, you sort of, you know, oh, I don't want to come out. But you do come out, and you use the energy and the peace. You're not dissociated. You're dissociated in a sense when you're in meditation, but you always give yourself the almost the pre-meditative suggestion, I will come out at 3 o'clock. When you come out at 3 o'clock, you come out slowly, give yourself time to get back into things, and then you can work really well, efficiently, productively, because your mind is clear. So yeah, of course you disassociate, but then you associate again. You just leave things for a few moments, and then you get right back in there. Okay, any questions from our audience here? I think I can read your mind. The question is, can we go now? And the answer is yes. So I'll just do some bowing, as is my custom, and then you can do whatever you need to do within reason.